All right, Jabo, say good morning. Let's begin. So our share this morning is dedicated by Mr. and Mrs. Martyr in commemoration of the yard site of Mr. Martyr's father, Rafal ben Eliezer HaKohen. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah and his family a nechama. All right, so we'll say, let's begin. A lot to do today. Really fascinating Gemara is happening today. So we left off with massive Rava, the CUA of the Rabbah. So today's daf is Membav, 46, and we left off on 45B, massive Rava, which is 2, 4, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. So massive Rava, the CUA of the Rabbah. So Rava raised the following question. In order to go ahead and support Rabbah. And what was the question? Hanosin talisa l'uman. Person goes in and gives their cloak, gives their talis to a craftsman. Uman omer shtayim katzatzteli. So the uman says, listen, we arranged a wage of two zuz. We arranged a wage of two zuz. V'halo omer lo katzatzti l'cha ela achos. Whereas the balabas says, no, we never agreed on two. Rather, again, I only agreed with you on one. So we'll say, now we have a situation where l'maisa, again, there's a machlokis between the owner of the object and the uman as to what was the fee for service. Uman says two, balabas says one. So what's the halach? I mean, how do we resolve this? I'm sorry? So this is not, so modi mitzvah is really a din halva. Right? This is not a halva. This is mamish just a machlokis in terms of the terms of the agreement, in terms of the work. So says the Gemara, it depends. So if the talis is still in the hands of the craftsman, al habalabayis lahavirayo, so it's up to the balabayis to go ahead and prove his side of the event. Now, if you look at the Rashbam, for just a moment, the Rashbam says, this is about 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom, al balabayis lahavirayo, edim mishum du uman mehemin, migo de matzi lameimar lakuach ubiyadi, So let's say, interestingly enough, the balabas, if the uman is the one holding on to the item, then by definition he is believed. Why? Because he has a migo. What's his migo? He could have said, "You sold it to me." Right? He could have said, "I'm the owner of this object." So because he could, now again, we'll challenge that in just a moment, but because he could have made this migo, therefore when he goes out and says, "You owe me two zuz," he is believed. Nasna lo bismano. However, if the uman had already returned the object back to the balabas in the appropriate time, bismano, in the right time, then nishba v'notel. Then ultimately, again, the uman would have to take a shavuah. He'd have to swear that he's owed the two, and he would get paid the two. Avar zmano. I will say, what happens if, again, the time, the agreed upon time for the return of the object has already elapsed? So what occurs under those circumstances? So hamotzi mechavero alav harayo. So we'll say, if you look at the Rashbam for just a moment, the Rashbam says, avar zmano, achar sheshaka hachama, hamotzi mechavero. So we'll say, this is if the uman returned the object after the elapsed time, then under those circumstances, again, the burden of proof will be upon the uman to go ahead and prove his claim of two. In the case of hamotzi mechavero alav haraya, so says the Gemara, okay, hechidami, what is this case? I mean, what's the metzias over here? Idiika edim lechze edim maika amri. So we'll say, if we're talking about a case where what? Where I gave the object to the uman in front of witnesses, then what? We'll say, very simple resolution. Let's ask the edim, what were the terms of the agreement? So the Gemara says, Ella, rather you have to say, tap of membav, Ella lav the leka edim. Rather, you have to say that this is a case where there are no witnesses, right? Rashbam brings down elalav deleka edim edim misira va'afagab dera. So we'll say this must be a case of where there are no witnesses. There are no witnesses, and even though I see the object in the possession of the uman, nevertheless katani uman mehemen migo di bay amrle lekuchehi biyadi. Rabbi says, so here's what's interesting. So the Gemara says, even though this is a case of Ra'a, where I see the object in the possession of the Uman, nevertheless, again, when the Uman claims two, and I claim one, the Braisa rules that the Uman is believed. Why? Because he has a Migo. What's the Migo? The Migo is, he could have said, I purchased it from you. So you see from here, that's what? That the Migo applies, even in a situation of Ra'a. even in a situation where I see the object in the hands of the Uman. To which the Gemara says, so therefore, because he would be believed to make this migo, he believed to say that I bought it, that I purchased it, you sold it to me, he's also believed regarding his wage. To which the Gemara says, lo, this is not the case. The olam deleka edim. In reality, we will assume that this is a situation where there were no witnesses. Vahu delo ra. And we'll say, this case has almost like a double whammy against it. Number one is that there were no witnesses to the Mesira. Number two is that the owner of the object doesn't even see the object in the possession of the Uman. When you put those two things together, I will say, then at the end of the day, when the Balabas comes along and says, I only owe you one, and the Uman says, I owe you two, the Uman will be believed on two counts. Number one, because there is no Edus. Number two, because the Balabas does not even see the object in the possession of the Uman. And under those circumstances, the Uman has a Migo. And his Migo is what? He could have said a number of things. He could have said, I purchased it from you. He also could have said, even more dramatically, what? I don't know what you're talking about. Right? I'm sorry. Here's right. He could have said, I gave it back to you. And he also could have said, I don't know what you're talking about. Right? I have no recollection of any of these events. So because he has all these other possible claims, therefore, again, he is believed when he stipulates regarding the wage. Fine. Masiv Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Uman Ein Lo Chazaka. So remember again, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak comes along and quotes the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that a Uman cannot establish a chazaka on an item. To which the Gemara says, Uman hu de ein lo chazaka. It is only an Uman who does not have the ability to establish a chazaka. Ha'acher yesh lo chazaka. Rabbi says, someone else other than the Uman would have the ability to go ahead and establish a chazaka. To which the Gemara says, Hechi dami. So what exactly is the case? Idi'ika edim acher amai yesh lo chazaka. So we'll say, if we're talking about a case over here, that I'm giving my object to be watched, or I'm giving my object to be worked on by another individual. So let's play this out. If we say that there are witnesses, in other words, there are witnesses that I handed this object over to Reuven to do whatever with it, but the point is I didn't convey ownership to him, then what? If there are witnesses, then even an achar, even a non-uman, should not be able to establish chazaka, because the edim could testify to the fact that it was not given to him as a sale or as a gift, but rather was given to him for some particular purpose. He says the Gemara, Ela lav deleka edim. Rather, what you have to say at the end of the day is that there are no witnesses. V'katani uman ein lo chazaka. And I will say, despite the fact that there are no witnesses, still the Mishnah tells me that a uman does not have the ability to go ahead and establish a chazaka. Therefore, the Gemara says, Tiyufta deraba tiyufta. Therefore, we have effectively refuted the position of Rabbah. It is indeed refuted. Again, remember, Rabbah was the one who said, in interpreting the case of the Mishnah, of Uman Ein Lo Chazaka, Rabbah was the one who said the only time that a Uman doesn't have a Chazaka is when you give it to him with Edim. Right? But if you give it to him without Edim, he does have the ability to go ahead and make a Chazaka. Why? Because mitoch sheyachal omer lo hayu dvar me'olam. Since he has the ability to say, I never even received the object, I don't even know what you're talking about, because he has that migo, he is believed ultimately again to say that the object is his as well. So therefore we have effectively refuted the position of Rabbah. So we'll say halacha l'maisa, what do we do with this? Meaning, this is an important halacha, because what we started with over here, and a number of you raised this yesterday after the shir, when we started this sugya in the Mishnah, the automatic assumption we thought was that an Uman could generally not create Chazaka. Just in general, an Uman never has a presumed Chazaka over an object in his possession, since there are many other reasons why that object would end up in his possession, namely because he's an Uman. Yet now we're beginning to see all of these qualifications of this Halacha. So how do we pass this? We're supposed to listen to this. So this is in Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, Kof Lamed Dalid Sif Aleph. So Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Ha'uman, V'davar Shu'uman, so craftsman, regarding his particular craft, Ein lo chazaka bekelim shetachas yado. He establishes no chazaka with any items in his possession. Echad kelim ha'asuyin lahashir lahaskir ve'echad shakir. Ketzad, so listen to this case I will say. Ra kelav biyad ha'uman. If I see my utensils in the hands of the Uman, v'hevi edin, Shem Yodim Shakelim Shalom. Now, both said, now understand, you know, this is a piece that the Gemara doesn't say explicitly, but it's understood. You know, if I show up at the Uman's house and I say, Uman, that's my pot. You know, that's my pot. You know, that's, so obviously, I both say, so, and the Uman says, no, it's not. So I say, oh, the halacha's on my side. Uman ain't no chazoka. I say, obviously, if I'm going to make a claim, I need to bolster my claim. Right? Somehow I need to support that. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says, I bring witnesses that that's my pot. Right? I bring witnesses that that's my kli, that's my utensil. Hu toin v'omer, letakin nisatev l'cha. So I say, listen, Uman, I gave you the utensil to fix. And the Uman says, lo ba biyadi ela b'mechira o matana. Right? Or, but on the other hand, the Uman claims, no, you gave it to me, you sold it to me, you gifted it to me. Osha natan atana satali atamachartali achar shebal yadi letakno. Or the Uman says, yes, you originally gave it to me to fix, but then what? Then you sold it to me, or then you gifted it to me. Afapi shemasrulo shalom bifnei edim vafilum shabi adu Uman kamashanim bal hakli naman umotzi oso miyad ha'um. So we'll say, so bottom line, the way the Shulchan Aruch Paskins is like this, that halacha l'maisa, an Uman doesn't have a chazaka. But I will say, that is only assuming that what? That I could furnish the proper edus that the utensil is mine. So if I show up to the Uman, I say, that's my talus. That's my talus. Uman says, you sold it to me. You gifted it to me. As long as I can produce edus that is indeed my talus, the Uman is not believed. The Uman does not believe. I am believed because that's what means Uman in lo chazak. Of course, we'll say if an Uman produces a shtar or the Uman produces some other of his own testimony, that's a different story. But in the absence of the ability for the Uman to go ahead and substantiate his claim through some type of independent testimony through a shtar, the halacha is an Uman does not have chazakah. But again, the idea of Shulchan says this is the tiyuf to the rabbi. We don't pass like rabbi. In other words, we don't say Uman ain't no chazakah only when there's edus that I gave it to him as an Uman. Rather, any case that I gave it to him, as long as I'm able to prove my claim that the utensil is actually mine, the Uman does not establish chazakah.
That's my tithe. I bring edus as my tithe. Doesn't matter if you're an Uman or not. I'm bringing a riot, and then I'm able to...
No, because I could say, you have edos that's at your tithe, but if I'm in possession of that, possession right. Normally is 9/10 of the law. So the burden of proof is hamotzi mechaber alav
ha'raya.
That is correct. That is correct.
But that's only in items that he's an Uman, right?
Correct. And that's why, again, the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch was, we'll say, let me be clear on this. He says over here, ha'uman bedavar shehu uman. So right, meaning if I'm a launderer and somebody and I have a pot in my possession, then that's nothing to do with my umnus. The idea over here is you can't create a chazaka on items that are normally in your possession as part of your livelihood. It's part of your livelihood. Good. So again, obviously with all of these halachas, as you understand, I'm only giving you the tip of the iceberg. All of these are much more intricate and much more involved. But at least again for resolution of the sugya, I will say now we're going to come to really what is an absolutely lemaisa sugya. Listen, well, kind of. So listen, ten rabbanan. Okay, are you ready for this? Nischafu lo kelim be kelim be beis uman. So listen to this. Let's say I drop something off at the uman, and there's a mix up at the uman, and I get the wrong keli back. So I go to the dry cleaners, right? I go and I drop off my dry cleaning, and I get the wrong item back. So we'll say, now let's assume over here, by the way, that's what? The item is the same size. So meaning, I get an item back that is technically usable for me, but it's just not mine. So what's the halacha? Am I permitted to go ahead and use that object or not? So the halacha is, Harei ze yishtamish bahen. You are permitted to use that object. Ad sheyavo halo v'yito eshalo. Until the rightful owner comes along and claims his object. So we'll say, so that's case number one. Case number one is, there's a mix-up at the Beis Ha'uman. I am getting the wrong object. The object does not belong to me. Somebody else presumably got my object. The halach is, I am permitted to go ahead and use the object until the owner of the object comes. Now take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says over here, it's the last short line I'll just say blessed are the intermediate lines of the Rashi. Rambam beis ha'uman shenasala uman talis shel adam acher. The uman gives me someone else's talis. Harei zeh yishtamish. Ad sheyavo halo. First, why don't I will say ad sheyavo halo also shenatal taliso shel zeh ha'uman v'lo havi shal shlamidah. So we'll say so again. So I am permitted to go ahead and use the item you will call use the talis that was given to me. Now contrast that with the next ruling in the Gemara. Beis ha'avol beis ha'mishta. But say let's say again. I go to be Menachem Avol, or I go to a chasana, and they hang up my coat in the coat room. Or I come to shul, and what happens? I hang up my coat in the coat room. And I come back about saying, what happens? As is, Maisim B'chol Shabbos. What happens? I go and I come back, and my coat that looks like my coat is there, right? It's not even the same size as my coat is there, but it's not my coat. It's not my coat. In other words, someone accidentally took my coat, but there's another coat there. I will say, what's the halacha? The halacha is, Hare ze lo yishtamish bohem. I am not permitted to use that coat left in the coat room. Rather, again, I have to try to track down the rightful owner, and I have no right to use that coat until, again, the rightful owner comes, hopefully returns my coat to me, I give his coat back to him. So says the Gemara, Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. So I say, so why is there a distinction between these two rulings? In other words, why is it that when I get the wrong item from the Uman, I am permitted to use it until the rightful owner comes along? And yet, if my coat gets taken in the shul, I can't use the coat left behind. What's the pshat? To which the Gemara says, Amarav Rav said, Havi Yasivna Kame de Chavivi. I was once sitting before Chavivi, Va'amrali, and he explained this to me in the following way. V'chi ein adam asui lomar l'uman, machar li talisim. Do people not tell the uman? Is it not common for people to tell the craftsman, can you please sell the talis on my behalf? They're both saying, now what does this mean? What does this mean? Suppose I say the Gemara is saying over here that it's common for an uman to not just provide a service of, let's say, laundering the clothing, but it's also common for him to provide a service of selling the object. So because of that, Rabosai, it is possible that what's occurred over here is that Lamaisa, again, the Uman is empowered to sell this garment. Therefore, again, he has Rishus over this garment. Because he has Rishus over this garment, therefore what? I have the ability to use it until my rightful garment, until my talus is returned. But says the Gemara, there are a couple of qualifications to this. Am Rabbi Chibrei Rav Nachman, Lo Shanu Elohu, Aval Ishta Uban Avlos. So what's the qualification number one? Is that this is assuming that what? This is assuming that Lamaisa, the garment was given to me by the Uman himself and not by his wife and children. Because if I came into his shop, I came into his home, no, the home was the shop, and I come to pick up my item and his wife or his children end up giving me the wrong talis, so it's quite possible that what? That it was just simply a mistake, that I wasn't given a talis over which the Uman has the right to sell, but rather I was simply given the wrong talis. If I was given the wrong talis, then Lamaisa, again, I do not have the rishus to sell it. Was I take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment? Amar Abchiya, second line in the wide lines. Tam dereisha balafarish, maishna miseifa, v'chi ein adamasoi v'hilchach, ikal ameimar, listen to this, sha'uman machar talis achos, shumatakin. So we'll say it changes it, the Bach changes that too. Talis echod. So the uman sold one talis shumatakin b'mitzas balabayis shetziva lo lemachro v'ta umanu machar taliso shalze v'nosan lo talis zumidas ad shiachzir lo es shalo. So we'll say Reb Chiya says the following, that some, because an uman is often empowered not just to launder or to fix things, but to sell things. What we're concerned about what happened over here is the following. You know, Reuven and I both drop off our talisim. What happens? Reuven says to the Uman, listen, if you happen to find a buyer, I'm happy to have you sell my talis. What ends up happening? Reuven accidentally sold my talis. So what does he do? He gives me Reuven's talis to use until he could work out getting back my talis. And he's empowered to do that because, again, he's been empowered by Reuven to transact with Reuven's talis. So therefore, again, that's why Rabbi said, I have the reshus to use this talis until I get back my talis. But with a couple of caveats. Caveat number one is that I got this directly from the Uman and not from a member of his family. Caveat two, v'hunam, as the Gemara says, ishto aban avlo, v'hunami amran, ela da amrle, talis stam. But I say, furthermore, this only works if the Uman himself tells me, here, take this talis. Aval talischa, but if the Uman says, here is your talis, then lo. Then Rabbi said, the halacha is not like this. And as Rabbi said, if the Uman says, take a talis, then we assume that what? Something happened. The Uman needs time to work it out. He's giving me this talis to use. If he said, here, take your talis, then my concern over here is what Rabbi said, that perhaps, again, the Uman has just made a mistake. And if the Uman has made a mistake, I don't have the reshus to go ahead and use this talis. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Aval imam Rabbi said, it's about six lines up from the bottom. Aval amar lo helech talischa. Kasavar hu shezu hi shalo. The Uman mistakenly thinks that this is my talis. Va'asra lehishtamesh shalomidas. And it will be asra for him to go ahead and use it without the das, without the das of the individual. V'chein halacha. And I will say, this is indeed the halacha. So says the Gemara. I'm really abai the rabbi. So we'll say, I'll just say something interesting, just so you should know. Halacha lemaisa, this is how we paskin. Now the reason why this is very important is, because if that situation happens to you, where let's say again you're in shul, somebody goes ahead and accidentally takes your coat and leaves another coat in its stead, but say one is not permitted to use that coat that is left behind. One is not, even if it's, what if it's cold? If it's really cold, yeah, no. No, the halacha is you're not allowed to use it. The halacha is because, again, I will say, that is what's called a shol shalomim das. That will be ultimately, again, a case, ultimately, of using something without the knowledge or shus of the owner, and that will be usher, you know, because logically, one would assume, well, look, if he took my coat, then I could take his coat because he'll be mochal. But the halacha is, I will say, it's not be paskin. If something is not, again, it follows a general Judaic principle, which is something is not yours, do not touch it. And even if the owner of this coat seems to be the one who ultimately took yours, one has no reshus to use that coat without the permission of the owner.
You have a chiv to return it?
Yeah, sure. There's a chiv of Shav Saveda. Absolutely. Absolutely. So it says,
even if you know that the person will let you use it?
So yeah, that's something different. If you know, it says, you know, Chaim Yankel in there, and you know Chaim Yankel is your friend, and you guys have to do the same sizing and shopping together. So mamish, it's the same coat. And
different?
Yes, that would be different. That'd be different. If, meaning, any time where people have a close enough relationship where they know that they're mochel on the usage of their items without reshus, that's a separate discussion. When we say talus, remember, lav davka talus shal mitzvah over here. Correct. Talus shal mitzvah, you can use that reshus. Any chefta shal mitzvah, you can use that reshus of the owner. Correct. That's why, again, when we say talus over here,
no,
as an article of clothing. So it says the Gemara. I'm sorry?
It's mitzvah not to freeze.
That is true. I really have by the rabbi. So let's listen to this. Avai to Rava. Let's listen to this. So Rabbi says to Rava, I want to show you the dishonest people of Pumbedisa, what they do. So what do the dishonest merchants of Pumbedisa do? Amarle, Havli Sarvaloi. So we'll say, this is what would happen in Pumbedisa. I would go over to the Uman. I say to the Uman, Uman, give me my cloak. The Uman would respond, Lo hayu dvar in the olam. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have your cloak. It says the Gemara, I ha isli sahadi tichaz yu agabach. So I would say to the Uman, but I have witnesses who saw my cloak by you. Amarle, hahu achrina hava. To which the Uman would say, that's not your cloak, right? That's someone else's cloak. That looks like your cloak. So I would say to him, afkinei v'nachzinu, why don't you take out the cloak and let's have a look. Amarle ivra lo mafkinale. No, thank you. I'm not taking it out. We'll say now. What this means is, the Rashi says, be'emes lo tzu'enu, b'shul tano zecha shal hevel, erlocha mamon acherim. I have no responsibility, says the Uman, to show you the property of others. Right? I, as the Uman, am entrusted with these items, and I do not believe it's good practice for me to share with you the property or the possessions of other people. Therefore, I'm not taking it out. Amar Rava said, Shapir Kamarle, you know what? In reality, the Uman is in the right, right? Even though, again, the setup over here is that the Uman is trying to cheat the owner out of the object. The owner ultimately, the Uman seems to be able to manipulate the law on his side. Some days. On the other hand, Ra Tanya. So it says the Yima Ra Tanya. Ra Tanya also means the only time, going back to our previous sugya, the only time that I have the ability to really go ahead and extract something from the Uman is when I know that the Uman has it. I've seen it in his possession. Take a look at the Rashi Bank. Ra Tanya. Ra Talisa. Ra Talisa beyond the Uman. Shera Achshav. So we'll say the case, the only time where I really have the power of extraction is when I have seen that talis, I have seen that object in the possession of the Uman. So we'll say again, I don't see right now as it stands, I'm claiming I dropped it off in the hands of the Uman, but I have no testimony ultimately again that it's currently in the Uman's hands. And I haven't seen it myself. As such, if the Uman wants to cheat me out of this object, technically speaking, he has the ability to do so. Amar Ravashi, so Ravashi says, V'i chacham, so we'll say, however, if I'm a chacham, so I could go ahead and get the Uman to confess. How so? V'im chacham, mashrile, if I, the owner of the object, am a chacham, so listen to this. I should read it differently. V'i chacham, mashrile ra'a. If I'm a chacham, I will say what I need to do is I need to establish this case as a ra. Remember, going back to our previous halacha. If I go ahead and I see my object in the hands of the Uman, then that gives me a much stronger claim. Then if I could produce edus that says that that is my object, Uman in lo chazaka, and I have the ability to get my object back. The difficulty in this case is what? There's no ra. Why is there no ra? Because the Uman is refusing to produce the object. Because the Uman is saying it's not yours, and I have no responsibility to show you the property of someone else. So the goal over here is I need to create a situation of ra. I need to get that item visible, get edus that that's my item, and then I could extract it. How do I do that? Watch this. So I say to the Uman, the Rashbam points out over here, I say this to the Uman quietly. Amai tafistale, listen Uman, come on, let's be honest. You and I both know you have my object. So I guess the reason you're holding on to it is, lav mishum de islecha gaboy, it must be that I owe you some money. So must be I owe you money, and you are therefore seizing this object in satisfaction of the debt. So I'll make you a deal. Hashta, afkinu vishayminhu. So why don't you bring out the talis? Let's have it assessed. Shakal at didach ve'eshkal anadidi. You'll take your half, I'll take my half, and shalom ayisan. Obviously, I am playing with him, right? At the end of the day, I'm lying to him, right? Meaning, I'm going ahead and I'm trying to get him to produce the talis in order to create a situation of ra'ah, in order that I could extract the talis from him. But this is how I do it. Meaning, I pretend like I'm going to give him half of the value of the talis. And as long as ultimately, again, I get that to be ra, I get him to produce it, technically I should be able to extract it from him. So listen, if you're dealing with a sophisticated Uman, he's got an answer to this. What's his answer to this? Masi Amalei, lo tzarich nalashuma. It's okay. I don't need any evaluation. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, lo tzarich nalashuma didach. I do not need your evaluation. Kavar shamua kamai dekamach. The object has already been evaluated long ago, and I'm pretty sure it's valuable enough to satisfy the debt. So again, if you're dealing with a sophisticated yet crooked, I should say, a crooked, sophisticated Uman, so at the end of the day, again, this ruse will not work. Fine, weiter. Aris Eimu Chazak. So we'll say the next case in the Mishnah was a sharecropper doesn't have chazakah. We'll say these are really interesting cases. So a sharecropper does not have chazakah. So am I? Why does a sharecropper not have chazakah? After all, ad ha'idna palga v'hashtakulah. We'll say the assumption over here is that a sharecropper goes ahead and gets a portion of the crop, right? Whatever the percentage is. If the sharecropper has received the full crop for 3 years, then why does that not constitute chazakah? Meaning, is not his receiving the full crop for 3 years a testament to the fact that he's transitioned from sharecropper to owner, to which the Gemara says, up until now, he's only been receiving a portion of the crop, and now he's receiving the entirety of the crop. Is not that transition from a percentage to full ownership enough, good morning Mr. Schoenfeld, enough of the testimony of his ownership? Rabbi Yochanan says, no, what's the case? Rabbi Yochanan says, it's really interesting. Va'arisei bate avos. We'll say, literally translated, I guess what we would call it is an ancestral sharecropper. What's an ancestral or familial sharecropper? We'll say, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Aris, it's the first of the widest, but the wider lines. Aris, shabate avos, shahorid arisin tachtav osan gimoshanim. I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing over here. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, previous Rashbam, I'm sorry, still the short lines. Masnitsin ba'arisei bate avos ma'irin, sherigilin lishmor sadal shal mishpacha zume olam. Va'avoseim ba'arisus, ve'lo hayyucholim lachlifo ba'arisus achire. Va'osan arisin, no'agim la'achol asaperos, beiz v'gim moshan, va'achreken yochlu abaylim kimokin. Let's listen to this. With these long-standing, long-term ancestral or familial sharecroppers, what often happened was the following. What often happened was is that the arrangement would be the family would enjoy the crop, the owner would enjoy the crop for a number of years, and the sharecropper would enjoy the crop for a number of years. In other words, even though a classic sharecropping agreement is the owner gets 70%, whatever it is, and the sharecropper gets 30%, apparently, again, with what we'll call an embedded sharecropper, often the arrangement was you get X number of years, I get X number of years. So mostly in this kind of situation, you could have a sharecropper that is enjoying the produce, the entire produce, for three plus years, but that does not establish chazaka. Why? Because that's the nature of the sharecropping agreement. Rav Nachman, so say Rav Nachman said, Arit shahorid aris in tachtav, yesh lo chazaka. So let's listen to this. Rav Nachman said that in aris, we'll say shahorid aris of tachtav. Now this is a case over here of a sharecropper. Now the Rashbam says this is the first white line of the Rashbam. Aris shal bate avos shehorid aris in tachtav ose gimel shanim shaylo lecho v'hulo ase manklo. So let's say the sharecropper, I guess the right term is outsources. Right, there's another area. Okay, he outsources. So right, we'll say I own a field. I have a familiar ancestral sharecropper. And what happens? He outsources. And he brings in his own sharecropping team. And that occurs for 3 years. So I'll say the halacha is the sharecropper establishes chazaka. If he outsources the sharecropping for 3 years, the harvesting for 3 years, then that establishes his chazaka on the field. My time, what's the reason for that? Because I will say, most owners, like an owner, is not going to allow an aris to bring someone whom the owner did not hire onto the field. In other words, the notion of the sharecropper outsourcing the workings of the field to someone else is not something that owners would normally allow to occur. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, and therefore I will say, if that does occur, that's demonstrative of the fact that the aris is now the real owner. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, aris shechalak l'arisin. But says Rabbi Yochanan, we're not defining the situation. You have an aris who hired other arisim. Rabbi Yochanan, in this case, in the previous case of the outsourcing, my aris, the familial or ancestral aris, did what? Nothing. He totally outsourced the work, and he was managing. Right? He was a project manager. But he was not doing any of the work. So I'll say, that's demonstrative of his chazaka, of his ownership, because I, the owner, would not have someone else other than my aris doing work. On the other hand, if the aris hired other helpers, he hired other sharecroppers to help him in the work, but the aris is working alongside of them, then that's not demonstrative of the aris's ownership. This is a typical sharecropping agreement. In lo chazaka, my taima, emor harmanya ba'alma shavya. This is simply a harmanya. We'll say, what's harmanya? Look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says over here, v'ikal emeimar harmanya shavya, rishus nas nalo v'horid arisin. Imo im torachu la'asos levado. Let's say we assume over here harmanya means permission, that the owner of the karka, the owner of the land, gave the aris permission to bring in some additional workers to be able to help him in his load. Shalach le Rav Nachman bar Chista, Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. So Nachman bar Chista sent to Rav Nachman bar Yaakov. Yilam deno Rabbeinu. So Rebbe teach us. Aris meid, o eno meid. So we'll say, does the Aris have the ability? I will say, now this is an interesting question. So let's say I'm the owner of the field, and I have Reuven as a sharecropper. So the shaila is now, let's say my ownership is being challenged. Does my sharecropper have the ability to testify on my behalf, or is he considered to be a nogeya b'davar, or does he have a conflict of interest? Right, not a conflict of interest, but is he a nogeya b'davar? Does he have not a conflict, a vested interest in this Eidos? And I will say, anytime you have a vested interest in Eidos that you're giving, then what? The Eidos is disqualified. So can my artist testify on my behalf to solidify my ownership? To which the Gemara says, Hava Yosef, Rav Yosef Kamei, Amar Lihachi, Amar Shmuel, Aris Meid. So Rav Yosef said in the name of, right, Rav Yosef said in the name of Shmuel, Shmuel says an artist is permitted to testify on behalf of the owner. I have a Hatanya Eino Meid. Rabbi, we learned in a brayso that says that an aris cannot testify on behalf of the owner. To which Gemara says, "Lo kash." Is that a contradiction? Ha di ikapera ba'ara, ha deleka pera ba'ara. We'll say ultimately, again, it depends. This is actually quite an interesting distinction. It depends if there's produce on the ground or not. Look at the Rashi for just a moment. Ha di ikapera ba'ara, shadayin lo natala aris chelko. So we'll say if the aris has not yet, meaning if the produce is on the field, and the sharecropper has not yet taken his portion, he is not permitted to testify on behalf of the landowner. Why Rabbi will say? Because in this case, he's nogeya be'edus, because what is he concerned about? If indeed I am not the owner of that land, and that land goes to someone else, then what? The sharecropper loses his portion. So because of that, he has a vested interest to testify and make sure that that land remains in my possession, therefore he's called a nogeya beiduso. Therefore, I will say he's called a nogeya bedaver. He has a vested interest in the testimony, and therefore his testimony is not believed. On the other hand, hadaleka peiros para, we'll say if there is no produce in the land, in other words, let's say the field is already harvested, then what? Then he has no vested interest. Or let's say, again, the field has not yet yielded any crop, or he has not yet worked the field, meaning there's no produce yet, then he is permitted to go ahead and testify on behalf of the landowner, because the assumption is that he has no vested interest in the Eidos. So we're going to look at the Rashi for just a moment. So like Aperis Bara, Fekam lo tarach ba haris klum, the aris has not yet worked this land in this year. Matzi lahayid, delo marviach midi behai Eidos. Because we'll say at the end of the day, he doesn't benefit in any way from this Eidos. Now, I know what you're thinking. So it says the Gemara, V'i, V'im Yishum, Shem Nishar HaKakar V'adruven, Hayo Moridu Barisos, Barisos. So we'll say, aye, but you're going to say, but 1 second, the Oris does have something to lose. We'll say, what does he have to lose? Even if there's no produce right now, this is his job. Right? This is his job, right? He's going to be out of a job. So we'll say, so what do we say? This is interesting. He says, Harbe Yimatze Sada Barisos. But we'll say, the one thing that there's no shortage of is sharecropping jobs. There are always sharecropping jobs, right? Meaning you could always find, apparently the market always demanded for this. And therefore, again, if it turns out that he doesn't have a job with Reuven, he'll be able to find a job with someone else. So the Gemara goes weiter. So says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan. So we'll say, now, what we're going to get into a little bit now are some of these other discussions regarding people who have financial relationships with one another and their ability to go ahead and testify on behalf of one another. So watch this. Arev may love. So we'll say, Arev is a guarantor. So what's the case over here? I borrow $10,000 from Reuven. So what happens? Reuven will lend to me as long as I have an Arev, as long as I have a guarantor. My guarantor is Shimon. Now we'll say, so what happens? So let's say in this case over here, So I paid back the loan, and the lender is challenging the fact that I did not pay back the loan. So we'll say that locha is my guarantor is permitted to go ahead and testify on my behalf. Now we'll say, isn't he a nogeya b'davar? Right? After all, again, it's in his best interest to testify that what? That I have repaid the loan, because if not, he could potentially be on the hook. To which the Gemara says, he could testify for me as long as what? The general assumption is that you only come to a guarantor when when the borrower does not have sufficient funds to repay the debt. If the borrower has sufficient funds, the guarantor really is off the hook. So I say the Gemara essentially says the following. A guarantor is permitted to testify on behalf of a borrower, provided that what? The borrower has the necessary funds to repay the debt in question. Because if that's the case, then the arev is not really a nogea bedavar. Why is it not a nogea bedavar? Because whether the lovet wins or the lovet loses, the guarantor is not impacted, because the lovet, the borrower, has his own funds with which to repay the debt. Similarly, malve meyed lelove. So I will say again, a malve, a lender, is permitted to go ahead and testify on behalf of a borrower. Why I will say, but doesn't the lender have a vested interest in ensuring that the borrower maintains his assets? If so, is the lender not a nogea bedavar when it comes to the testimony? For who is the ara achrisi? This is talking about a case where what? The borrower has other land, meaning or other assets. The idea over here is that whatever's happening in these legal proceedings does not impact the lender's loan. His loan is already secure by the knowledge that there are other assets with which to repay his loan. The legal question, the legal issue in question over here revolves around other pieces of property. So as long as the borrower has sufficient funds or sufficient assets to pay off his debt, therefore, again, the lender is permitted to testify on behalf of the borrower, and it's not called a nogea be'edus. Similarly, says the Gemara. We'll stop over here for today. We're not finished with this sugya, but again, you begin to see the motif over here. The motif over here is situations where people do have, are financially intertwined with one another. As long as, again, the specific interests are cared for, one could testify on behalf of the other regarding other financial matters. We'll pick up with other examples of this in Yeretz Hashem tomorrow.